Track 1. The Rialto has nothing on this. Until the mid-18th century, this mid-Glamorgan valley contained a scattering of farmsteads and little else. The stone pedestrian bridge to your left, as you exit the museum, was the first sign of change. It was built so that farmers could take their cattle to market in Caerphilly, but it would soon become the local landmark of a rapidly growing town in the grips of the Industrial Revolution. Nobody appreciated the significance of William Edwards's bridge until the Duke of York returned from his grand tour of Europe in 1764, waxing lyrical about the 95-foot span of the Rialto Bridge in Venice. Local historian Brian Davis shares the story of the town.
Well, this of course brought a letter from a friend of William Edwards's to the editor of the magazine which had published the Duke of York's account, and Edwards's friend pointed out that 95 feet is nothing. William Edwards's bridge spans 140 feet, and it was the longest single-span stone bridge until the spans of the new London Bridge were built in 1830. That's not the London Bridge that's there now, it's the London Bridge that's out in Arizona.
For its maker, the old bridge was to become somewhat of a millstone around his neck. After crossing the bridge, turn left down Zion Street to get a good view of the structure and listen to track 2 to hear about Edwards's costly lesson. As you make your way to this point, you will appreciate that horses pulling loaded carts would not have made easy progress up or down this bridge, so the Victoria Bridge was added on its south side 101 years later in 1857. Can you also spot the spelling mistake on the plaque upon the top of the bridge? Track 2. If at first you don't succeed.
Well, it's the old bridge that is the most famous landmark in the town. The story became very well known. It goes back to 1750. There was a timber bridge here before, but that was beyond repair. So it was decided to build a stone bridge, and a local stonemason, William Edwards, was commissioned. He built a perfectly adequate three-arch bridge, but the River Taff floods very badly in winter. So Edwards finished his bridge, but it was swept away in a flood the following winter. The unfortunate man had signed a 7-year guarantee clause with his contract, so he had to rebuild. So he and his timberman decided to build a single-span bridge. His timberman, Thomas William, drove wooden piles into the river, built the timber shuttering, but by this time it was the following winter, and along came another tremendous flood, and Thomas William's timber work was seen passing through Cardiff, out into the Severn. So he had a third try and built a bridge of the same proportions as this one, but without those three cylindrical holes each side. Thomas William took away his timber shuttering, and poor old William Edwards watched over a period of about 5 or 6 weeks as the sides of his bridge, which were too heavy, slowly collapsed inwards, and the crown sprang up in the air, and his third bridge went down the river. So this is his fourth, completed in 1756, and the key to its success are the three holes each side. They don't let water through, as some people think. They're too high up for that. They reduce the weight of the bridge. They take about 100 tons out each side, so it's lighter, but its strength is not reduced.
From the bridge, walk past the Molster's Arms to the pedestrian crossing leading to Ynys Angharad Park. Listen to track 3, Once Through the Park Gates. Track 3, Angharad's Floodplain.
This is Ynys Angharad Park. The word Ynys in Welsh can mean either an island, which is its most common meaning, or a floodplain. In this case, it's a floodplain. It's alongside the river, and everyone who's lived in Pontypridd for any length of time has seen areas of the park flooded. Now, as far as Angharad is concerned, that is a Welsh female personal name lost in history. We don't know who Angharad was. When the town developed in the 19th century, it grew up on the opposite side of the river, which was the easier place to build and also better for road communications. Then, when the train works was established in 1818, the key family, the Lennox family, who were co-owners, established themselves here and built a mansion, not a huge mansion, but quite a sizable mansion, and the land around it, which had been farmland, became part of their estate. So right through the period of growth of the town in the 19th century, this was not a public park. Ynys Angharad House actually became a local authority clinic for a while, and people in Pontypridd can still remember it. It was only demolished when the new Cardiff to Merthyr trunk road, the A470, was built.
Continue straight on until you reach the children's play area on your left. Listen to track 4 beside the small drinking fountain. Just before you arrive at this point, look down to the shrubby area on your right. Here you'll find one of many exotic trees in the park.
My name's Gwyn James, and for the last 15 years I've been Trees and Woodlands Officer for Rhondda Cynon Taf. Now if you look down to your right, the shrub beds there were planted as a sensory garden. The cypress you see in the middle is actually a Patagonian cypress, a Fitzroya, and it's, as far as I'm aware, it's the only one, certainly in Rhondda Cynon Taf. But that seems to like its place and it's getting away very well. But it is quite a rare tree for this part of the world.
Track 4, the unlikely centre of shipping chain manufacture.
Well, this small drinking fountain in memory of Lewis Gordon Lennox is the only real memorial to a family who very largely shaped the history of this town. The story goes back to the early 1800s when a naval lieutenant named Samuel Brown had the very sensible idea that the ships of the day, which were getting bigger, could be anchored much more safely if their rope hawsers were replaced with wrought iron anchor chains. Brown had the idea, his cousin Samuel Lennox had the money. They wanted to establish a works at a place which had access to the best wrought iron that was made anywhere in Britain, in other words, Merthyr Tydfil. So they set up here in 1818. There had been a small works here before making nails that had established a location for industrial use, and there were two locks on the Glamorganshire Canal which provided a head of water for the water-powered machinery in the works. So Pontypridd became the very unlikely centre of chain cable manufacture for British shipping. There's that famous photograph of Isambard Brunel standing with great chains hanging behind him. Those were the launching chains for his biggest ship, the Great Eastern, and they were made at Pontypridd. And Brunel says in his diary that I asked Mr. Lennox to stand with me for the photograph, but he declined, so I alone am hung in chains. The gentleman who Brunel is referring to was George Lennox. But it's the same family, and Lewis Gordon Lennox had died just a couple of years before this park was being established, hence the little drinking fountain to his memory. The last ship that Pontypridd made anchor chain for was the QE2. Britain doesn't make big ships anymore, so Pontypridd doesn't make chain.
Retrace your steps a little and turn right, following the path in between the children's play area and the golf course. Listen to track 5 beside the memorial with two figures standing side by side. Track 5, Hen Wlad Fy Nhadau. The origin of Wales's national anthem, Hen Wlad Fy Nhadau, Land of My Fathers, is a poetic one told by Gwyn Griffiths.
It was composed in 1856 and soon became a popular tune in Pontypridd. It is debatable whether the words or the music were written first. The popular explanation is that James, the son, inspired by the melodic sounds of the waters of the Rhondda, composed the music, then asked his father to write words for it. There is an alternative suggestion that Evan James wrote the words in response to a letter from an older brother inviting him over to America, a beautiful land of great opportunities. Evan responds, "My Hen Wlad Fy Nhadau yn annwyl I mi. The land of my fathers is dear to me, too dear to rush off to America." Then he describes all about Wales that he finds too attractive to be able to leave it for another land.
The statues were the work of William Goscombe John, the best sculptor that Wales has yet produced. The young man with a harp represents music, and the young woman represents poetry. So the two statues represent the two elements of the anthem. Evan and James James are shown head and shoulders on the plaque beneath.
At the foot of the memorial, we have the grave of Evan and Elizabeth James. They had been buried in the cemetery of Carmel Chapel at the bottom of Gray Gwen. In the early 1970s, Pontypridd Urban District Council wanted to knock down the chapel and widen the road, and the bodies were exhumed and reburied here on July 1, 1972.
We will pick up the story of the national anthem later on, when we visit the site of the James's home. For now, head around the left-hand side of the bandstand and follow the path between the war memorials and the Tafelau Pavilion to head towards the tennis courts. Listen to track 6 in the Sunken Garden with a Cauldron. Track 6, A Coal Mining Legacy.
This particular dram originates at Big Pit at Blaenawon, and it's not a very old one. But the idea is that it represents the contributions made by the miners of the local collieries when a public appeal was issued to buy this land and establish Ynysangharad Park just after the First World War. Everybody in the town, local businesses, shops, private individuals contributed, but the largest group contribution was from the mine workers, which is quite typical of the time because the miners' union at that time was much more than a trade union. It was miners' money that contributed largely to the building of the first hospital in Pontypridd, the cottage hospital. And wherever you go in the valleys, you'll find that it was the miners who contributed to local recreation grounds, swimming pools, welfare halls, hospitals, libraries. So this is one memorial to what was a very significant contribution made by the men in the mining industry.
Exit the Sunken Garden and listen to track 7 on the footbridge over the River Taff. As you pass by the basketball and tennis courts, you will spot a number of figures that have been carved into old trees using a chainsaw.
5 or 6 years ago, this was an horse chestnut avenue, and the horse chestnuts were the one with the red flower, or candles they called it. The trees had become fully mature and they were starting to shed branches. So because it's an avenue, and an avenue is a landscape statement. So about 5 years ago, we took a decision that the avenue ought to be felled. We did do some consultation with the public and people who use Ynysangharad Park, saying, look, you know, these trees are getting very brittle, and you know, we need to make a decision. So the trees were felled, the stumps ground, and we've replanted. Three of the trees were done by a man who does environmental sculptures over a period of 3 years. Now you've done a bowler and a rugby player, and, you know, right? So these were the old trees. They were cut off at about 3 metres high, and a sculpture was made.
Can you work out who the third sculpture is? Track 7, Bridge over the River Taff.
So standing on the footbridge out of the park, if we look downstream, we can see another river coming in from the right. That's the River Rhondda, which you can't really see in Pontypridd because Pont Rhondda, the bridge over the Rhondda, now has shops on both sides. So this river kind of sneaks through the town unnoticed.
By here, you see a lot of ducks swimming, mostly mallard. Occasionally you'll see pochard and now and again a tufted duck. But on the river here now, we've got quite an healthy population of cormorants. And I have seen gusander here. Yeah, I have seen dipper here, and I have seen kingfisher. The water quality in the Taff is better than the Wye because there's no intense agriculture. Whereas on the Wye, of course, farmers are muck spreading and putting fertiliser. Well, of course, it gets into the water course, isn't it? A good indicator of water quality is the dipper. They live on underwater crustaceans, you know, and insects and what have you, which are on the bottom, not on the top. And these little larvae or mollusks and whatever is in the water, they wouldn't survive in unhealthy water. From what I understand from my fishing friends, though, since they put the fish ladder in Tree Forest, we do get a lot of grayling going up here. You see fishermen now fishing for grayling. And apparently there is salmon going up. In past centuries, apparently, this was one of the country's premier salmon rivers, or so I'm told.
Carry on across the bridge and turn right onto Taff Street. Very soon you will pass by Market Street on your left, the location for track 9. However, for now, carry on and listen to track 8 beside the large ornate fountain further along Taff Street. Track 8, an emblem of prosperity.
Well, the fountain in the middle of the town was originally a public drinking fountain, and it had horse troughs around the base, which have long ago been removed. The design really harks back to the ancient Christian crosses which are to be found in some of the churches down in the Vale of Glamorgan, which have got fascinating, intricate Celtic knotwork on them. If you look at the four pillars of this fountain, you'll find several different designs on them. They're not all the same. So the architect actually copied the crosses, which are well over 1,000 years old, which still survive in the churches 10 or 12 miles to the south of here. The two dragons on the top are not totally accurate representation of a traditional Welsh story which features a battle between two dragons, one red and one white. Here we have one red and one gold. And in the story, the red and the white dragons represent the Welsh and the Saxons. By the time this was built, Taff Street was well established, you see. The town was up and going, its population was probably about 15 to 20,000. Pontypridd peaked at 45,000 during the First World War. It's now dropped back to about 33,000. So this was built at a time when the town was confident and expanding. The chain works, the tin plate works were going full blast. A new group of collieries had been sunk to the deeper coal seams. It is an emblem of Pontypridd's late Victorian prosperity. The area around has been changed a little since. There was the usual late Victorian public feature of a gents' convenience under the road here, right? Which has been filled up. That no longer exists, although many people still have fond memories of it.
Retrace your steps back along Taff Street and turn right into Market Street. Listen to track 9, where the road turns left to rejoin Taff Street. Track 9, an upstart town.
There have been markets in the town since the early 19th century, cattle markets and occasional fairs. As the town grew, it became really the market town for the Rhondda Valley and the lower end of the Cynon Valley and the Merthyr Valley, and arguably the most important market town in the valleys of Mid Glamorgan. And this, of course, marked a huge change in shopping habits, if you like, in the surrounding valleys, because the medieval market town had been Llantrisant, and all the medieval roads centred on Llantrisant. Now, Llantrisant people, I think, still to a certain extent resent the fact that in the 19th century, because of the growth of industry and towns in the valleys, the market moved from its medieval origins in Llantrisant and came first to Treforest and then to Pontypridd. So down on the northern edge of the vale, people still regard Pontypridd as an upstart town that pinched their market 150 years ago.
Have you noticed the fine Victorian and Edwardian architecture above the modern-day shop frontages? It was on these floors that a variety of low-profile but no less important jobs took place.
Some unlikely things happened in some of these buildings. In Old Bank Chambers, which is on the left just before we get back into Taff Street, there was a drawing office on one of the upper floors where a lady worked designing equipment for colliery winding gear, detaching hooks they were called, which was then manufactured over at the chainworks at Brown Lennox.
From Market Square, turn right into Taff Street and continue up High Street. Turn right at the lights into Sardis Road. Listen to track 10 beside the blue plaque dedicated to Freddie Welsh. Track 10, the first belt and the longest platform.
Freddie Welsh was world lightweight boxing champion from 1914 to 1917, and he remains the only Pontypridd boxer to have won a world title.
David Guire is the assistant curator at Pontypridd Museum.
He was born Frederick Hall Thomas in Morgan Street in 1886. His upbringing was not that of a typical prize fighter, as his family was comfortably off, and young Freddie was sent away to be educated privately in Bristol. But Freddie was always independently minded, and at the age of 16 decided to seek his fortune in America. He developed an all-action style, specialising in close-quarter infighting, which wore down and demoralised his opponents. He turned professional in 1905 and undertook the symbolic name change to Freddie Welsh. During his career, he fought 168 times, losing only 5 bouts. In 1909, he was awarded the first ever Lonsdale belt, after beating Johnny Summers in London to win the British lightweight title. His career reached its peak in July 1914, when he finally got his chance to fight for the world lightweight title, and he comfortably beat Willie Ritchie in London over 14 rounds and returned to South Wales a hero. He held the title until 1917, when he lost to Benny Leonard in New York. He died in that city only 10 years later, at the young age of 41. In 1960, he was admitted to World Boxing's Hall of Fame.
Standing opposite is the town's infamous train station.
For many years, it has been claimed to have the longest platform in Britain. And at one point, the Guinness Book of Records announced that Pontypridd had the second longest railway station in the world after New York Central. I'm not quite sure about any of those claims, but the platform is a quarter of a mile long. The present up platform is a new one. So the station in its heyday only had one platform because the valley here is so narrow that it wasn't possible to build several platforms side by side. So they devised a unique design whereby several trains could pull in on each side of the same platform and pull out independently.
Continue along Sardis Road and past the independent chapel from which the road takes its name, the only chapel in Pontypridd to conduct its services in Welsh. Cross over the River Rhondda and look for a black marble plaque high on the end wall of the first building across the river. Listen to track 11 here. Track 11. Home James. It is here we pick up the story of the national anthem again. The plaque marks the site of the small woollen factory owned by Evan James and his house next door to it.
Neither of them were born here. Evan James was born in Caerphilly. His son James was also born in the Rhymney Valley. They moved here in the late 1840s when Evan took up running a mill on the banks of the River Rhondda. They were, like most people who lived in Pontypridd at that time, first generation migrants into a growing town. Evan stayed here until he died. After his father's death, James moved first to Mountain Ash and then to Aberdare. So James's grave is in Aberdare.
So how was the family's personal correspondence elevated to such national prominence?
It was submitted to a competition at the Llangollen National Eisteddfod in 1858 in a collection of verse and song, and it won a prize at that Eisteddfod, and from that moment onwards it came to public attention and became used more and more. By the time of Evan James's death, it already really had the status of a national hymn, if you like, and it's never been contested.
Turn your back on the mill now and cast your gaze towards the railway viaduct.
The skew viaduct, which has very fine barrel vaulted skew masonry work, which you can now see because there's a roadway jammed under the main arch, it's 110 foot on the skew, so that it would stand in comparison with the famous bridge in Pontypridd. It wouldn't look smaller than that bridge, although in fact it is. But it was widened within about 10 years, and unfortunately they didn't double the viaduct in the same style as Brunel's. They went for a smaller span viaduct. Perhaps they were more cautious than Brunel. That arch now tends to spoil the look of Brunel's main skew arch because it's slap bang in the middle of the arch.
Before we go, let's return to the national anthem.
One quirky thing to remember, of course, about the Welsh National Anthem is that its composers, both father and son, were much more familiar with folk music than with choral music. So the first manuscript of the music of Heinrad Van Hadda is actually set to 6/8 time. You're intended to sing it at the pace of a brisk jig. Try it sometime.
Take a short detour down the steel steps to Mill Street. Where the road narrows and becomes a pedestrian underpass, listen to track 12. Track 12, Musician's Mural.
I'm Will Morris-Jones, who conducted the renowned Corcoder Garth Mixed Choir for 28 years, which still holds the record for winning the chief choral competition at the National Eisteddfod. This fresco is a gallery to celebrate famous Pontypridd musicians. It depicts internationally renowned artists, as well as the more traditional music-making formations, which are typical of these old mining valleys of South Wales. Here in Wales, Pontypridd is most famous because it's the town which gave us our national anthem. Every valley had its own brass band, and for those music makers who could not afford these expensive instruments, they could form a jazz band, which was a marching band of young bazooka and drum players. It had nothing to do with the jazz tradition which emanated amongst the black slaves in the United States of America. The choral tradition has always been strong in the valleys, and Pontypridd Male Voice Choir keeps that tradition going. The Shelley singers depicted here is no more, but today the choral tradition is strong, especially amongst the Welsh-speaking communities, namely Côr-Gwdr Garth, Merched y Garth, and Partir Efail. Two cousins who made a name for themselves as singers in the latter half of the 20th century are Gillian and Beverly Humphreys. Sir Geraint Evans became well known throughout the world as a distinguished opera singer, especially in the role of Falstaff, and Stuart Burrows, also from Kilvinnydd, made a worldwide name for himself as a classical singer. Morfydd Llwyn Owen, who unfortunately died at the age of 26 in 1916, became famous as a singer, instrumental performer, but most importantly as a prolific orchestral, choral and song composer. She won many awards for her work, and many of her solos and hymn tunes are as popular today as they were 100 years ago. And who could forget our globally famous and evergreen Sir Tom Jones, who sang Delilah and, of course, The Green, Green Grass of Home. His home was Laura Street, Treforest, Pontypridd.
Climb the steps back up to the main road and turn right. Listen to track 13 outside St Catherine's Church after safely crossing the road at the pedestrian crossing. Track 13, St Catherine's Church.
Hello, my name is Marcus Green. I'm the vicar here at St Catherine's Church in Pontypridd. The first thing that people notice at St Catherine's is the spire, 172 feet tall. And when you come into Pontypridd, I always say, don't bother with the sat-nav, just aim for the spire. Inside the spire, we have 8 bells. They ring nice and clear, annoying the neighbours, and they're one of the best set of bells here in South Wales. Church was put up in the 1860s. Originally, Pontypridd was a very small town, and as the Industrial Revolution grew, people decided we needed a bigger church. Cost about £5,000 to build the place, which sounds remarkable in this day and age. And it was opened in 1869 with a performance of Handel's Messiah. In fact, it was considered such an important occasion that even the local chain works gave its workers the day off to attend the opening. From the outside, it looks a fairly standard building, nice stonework. You can see from the outside that there are stained glass windows everywhere. If you can get inside, you'll see them, and they are quite remarkable. Very, very colourful, very, very vivid. On one side of the church, there's a series of windows that describe the history of Christianity in Wales from its very beginnings. And on the other side, it's story of the gospel, story of Jesus' life. Church was renovated at different times in its history. It didn't look like it looks today when it was first built. The north aisle of the church was built 20 years actually after it was built. It was incomplete when it was first built. And when they put this on, they realised they'd used a slightly different brick. So rather than leave the brick as it was, when you come inside, you'll see that there's this great design of brick inside. They actually had to put a colour wash over everything to make it all look the same. And over the years, it's been painted many times. And in 2005, we decided we needed to restore this to its original sort of 1885 colour wash. So we had scaffolding up, we paired it all back and restored it. And when you come into the church these days, this is what it looked like in 1885.
Continue along Gellie Wastad Road and listen to track 14 when you are in view of the Gellie Wastad Institute, which is set back from the road on the left. A blue plaque marks its significance. Track 14, the oldest building in town.
This is Gellie Wastad House. It was one of the houses of the Griffiths family, who also had a farm to the north of the town. And their most famous member was one Dr. Richard Griffiths, who is commemorated by the blue plaque on the wall. I first became interested in Richard Griffiths when I read a story that he gambled 500 guineas on a snail race. More importantly, Richard Griffiths was one of the first to appreciate the potential of mineral exploitation around here. He bought, at a very reasonable sum, from his brother-in-law the mineral rights to a large area of ground in the lower Rhondda Valley, and he built a horse-drawn dram road in 1809, which linked the first mines of the lower Rhondda with the Glamorganshire Canal down at Treforest. So Richard Griffiths can go down as the pioneer of the coal industry in Pontypridd. The earliest known picture of Pontypridd is an engraving dating from 1818, and the artist was standing on the far bank of the River Rhondda, just past its confluence with the Taff at the bottom end of the park, and he was looking up the valley, and there were no buildings in between, so he could see William Edwards's bridge at the top end of what is now the town. There are two buildings in the picture. One is the back of a little pub called the New Inn, which has long since disappeared, and the other building is this one. The town in 1818, the year that the chainworks opened, the town did not exist.
In case you wondered, Dr. Griffiths did win the bet. Continue along Gellie Wastad Road to our final stop, the Mooney Arts Centre, and listen to track 15. Track 15, the Mooney Arts Centre.
Well, on our left is the last of Pontypridd's religious buildings on our walk. This one is quite different to the chapels that we've looked at so far. They are mostly very well constructed, but rather plain buildings in a neoclassical style. This one has Gothic windows. It's got a rose window up to the right of the entrance. It's got a short but very complicated sort of spire. In fact, it's closer architecturally to St. Catherine's Church than it is to the chapels. That's because it's not part of the Welsh chapel tradition at all. This is an English Wesleyan chapel, built in 1895. Never very successful, because most of the population lived in suburbs around the town, not in the centre. So this building has long lost its original purpose. It's now the municipal theatre, cinema, concert hall, and it also has an art gallery and a rather nice cafe. The last building on our walk is the former municipal building, the headquarters of Pontypridd Urban District Council, built shortly after the establishment of the council in the late 1880s. This building dates from 1904, and it's a particularly fine building because it was constructed at the peak of the town's prosperity. People were coming in here, the population of the town was about to peak at 47,000, the coal mines were still drawing in more people. It was a wealthy town, and this building showed off the affluence, really, of Pontypridd in the early 1900s. Its style is derived ultimately from Italian Renaissance architecture.
We are just a short distance from the start of our walk. Your newly learnt local knowledge can be topped up with a visit to the museum or a well-earned refreshment stop at one of the cafes in Taff Street or the market. To return to the Pontypridd Museum, the start of this audio trail, continue along Gellie Wastad Road and head past the bus and police stations.